G'day, everybody, and welcome back to Rugby Wrap-Up. Matt McCarthy here at Studio 34 at the Fantasy Sports Network. I have the pleasure of being here with Mr. Doug Schoeninger. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, if you don't know who Mr. Schoeninger is, he is the man that brought professional domestic rugby to the United States for the first time. Doug, your season ended in a thrilling extra time match that saw the Denver Stampede lose to the Ohio Aviators on points, despite the fact that the fans were going berserk thinking their team had won. Yours truly happened to be there. It was in a Field of Dreams type setting in a little town called Obetz, Ohio. It seemed like all was good. In reality, it wasn't. You are here today in a rare on-camera appearance to give your side of the story. But before I turn the mic over to you, I have to ask one question that's out there for everybody. What do you have to say to the players, coaches, vendors out there whom are unhappy for not being paid in full for what they initially thought they'd get?
Right. I appreciate being here. To answer that question, I think the best way to answer that question is to start at the beginning of my relationship with USA Rugby and go to our present time. I think most people don't understand what happened. I know a lot of things that I read are probably half-truths at best, and there's a lot of secrecy, I guess, and I'm not sure why. So what I would like to do right now is go through the timeline. This is not an editorial. These are facts. This is what happened, when it happened, how it happened, so everyone can know what the facts are, and from that point we can start talking about we can editorialize it.
Okay.
So excuse my lack of glasses, but I'm not as young as I used to be. End of 2014, I met for the first time with USA Rugby. After much back and forth, determined to define the opportunity, we agreed on the shared vision. We agreed that the first season, it was important was that it fit between the World Cup and the Olympics. We also agreed that the perfect schedule for us was the spring, right? So we're all in agreement with that. We also agreed that we didn't have a lot of time and that it would be very rushed and that certain things might not happen the way we wish because of the time constraints. But it was very important to grab the excitement of that window. USA Rugby, because they had gone through this exercise before when they tried to bring English rugby teams, premiership teams into America, they had a lot of data. They were nice enough to share it to me and represented to me that this is the real data. So sponsorship data, market study data, et cetera, like that, which gave us a real accelerant on not having to do a lot of that work ourselves. And in the world of rugby, there isn't a lot of data out there. So that was very, very, very helpful. We all agreed that in order to get this thing done by the next spring, we had to sign our sanction agreement by February 2015. Okay, so right after we agreed to that, USA Rugby informed us, after we had agreed to an exclusive sanction agreement, they couldn't grant me an exclusive agreement anymore because, as they said at the time, they were having very difficult issues with United World Sports and their agreement, the Sevens agreement. I said, I understand their issue, but that didn't work for us, and we would just separate ways. This is obviously before signing of the agreement. They went back, thought about it, and they came back with the offer of the exclusive agreement. We accepted it. We continued our conversation. Right after that, which I didn't know, it was disclosed to us that there was an existing agreement already in place for an exclusive agreement. The agreement was with Will Chang, who is now the chairman of the board of USA Rugby, Chad Keck, who is now the chairman of the board of RIM, and Mayor Dominovan of Glendale. From what I understand, I wasn't around then, but from what they told me, nothing happened because of certain concerns of certain members of that three group, and they didn't do anything with it. The problem was they had to, it had about six more months to go, and they had to early terminate it in order to sign with me. You can't have two exclusive agreements. So that, for some reason, dragged out our negotiations, and we weren't able to sign in February. We signed in the end of April. From what I understand, that was the major reason. What's important to know is that the agreement that we have, because of the time constraints, are effectively the same agreement that those three had. The terms are the same, the years are the same, and everything is the same. I was very uncomfortable. My attorney was extremely uncomfortable with the agreement. It's not a good agreement. It's not well written, and the term of 3 years was obviously way too short. I expressed that to them, and they said, well, we don't have the time to go through the board approval process in order to make it happen so you can get going so you can have a spring season in 2016. I said, well, we got to do something. You got to give me some sort of commitments, some kind of reassurance that we're on the same page. USA Rugby gave me that assurance. They told me, after I explained to them, that I anticipated losing money for 3 years. And obviously, I would then need a long runway to make the money back, or what would be the point, you know? I mean, I'm going to side just here a little bit, just for 1 second, which I promised myself I wouldn't do, and just say, you know, when I got involved in this, I did it for multiple reasons. The major reason was a business, right? I'm very honest about it. I saw an opportunity here. I wanted, and I still see the opportunity, and I want to make money doing it. At the same time, I want to grow the game, and it's a lot of fun to do that, and to give opportunities to players and coaches, et cetera. I'll say that's my goal. I think a lot of people don't express their goal particularly directly and as honestly as that. And I'll leave it at that. You know, we went through that, and I finally agreed to take their sanction agreement. We signed it. They were able to terminate the agreement. I believe the sticking point was Mayor Donovan. And
Mayor of Glendale.
And we executed it. So we signed off on the modifications, the small modifications of the agreement. The agreement was signed in April 2015. RIM was announced in June 2015, about 2 months after we signed our agreement. We announced our league in November of 2015 with the season of April to July 2016. We began hiring coaches in January of 2016. USA Rugby asked us that we hire a few of their coaches and managers, as they couldn't afford to have them on their payroll. We, in the spirit of good cooperation, agreed to it, even though they weren't our first choices. The first game in Denver was played on April 17, 2016. The CEO of USA Rugby quit USA Rugby on April 29, 2016, via a press release, not previously mentioning it to me, and not even mentioning in the press release anything to do with us. And then, you know, he went in the press release through his accomplishments, and we weren't part of that. I emailed them, and I spoke to Nigel and other different USA rugby representatives about my concern. And they assured us that there was no change in direction, and that, in fact, everything would be the same. And they told me that there was two jobs that Nigel had to do. He had to renegotiate Bill Tatham's sanction agreement and my sanction agreement prior to his leaving.
Doug, we have to take a quick break
right
now, and we'll be right back. We'll be right back with more.
So this is the 10th anniversary of the NYC Rugby Cup, which is hard to believe. It's come a long way. I think we've got over 60 teams here today, and they're all kitted out, representing different teams from across the country. We've always had a theme every year, and this is the culminating event for our partner programs and our community programs that work with us throughout the year to come and showcase their skills and their go forward attitude as well. So it's super exciting to be celebrating the 10th anniversary. Thanks to AIG and Canterbury for supporting us, all the volunteers, all the sponsors, and especially the staff and volunteers. Some fantastic rugby, lots of sportsmanship, the kids still had a blast. And now, of course, now we've finished, the sun has come out. So that's the way it goes, I guess. Every day's a rugby day.
We're back, Matt McCarthy, with Doug Schoeninger, the owner of Pro Rugby USA. Doug, continue with the timeline.
To just finish up that last thought before the break, that Nigel was charged with, from what I understood and what I was told, to renegotiate Bill Tatham's sanction agreement and mine in terms of extending the term. He was also told to me at that time that Dan Payne was materially chosen, even though they were going through a kind of interviewing process, and that he, quote unquote, would be easy for us to work with and for the board to control. We, of course, were very nervous and very concerned. I expressed to Nigel at that time that maybe it was best we just shut the league down. It was 2 weeks into it, and I just saw the writing on the wall. He assured me once again that he would renegotiate and everything would be, quote unquote, buttoned up before he left.
Anything in writing?
Yes, absolutely. All of what I'm saying is provable. And first, more importantly, not truthful and all provable. Fortunately, in the world of emails, most of the thing is memorialized. We had multiple conversations through the month of May. Nigel left in the end of June. For June, we barely talked. USA Rugby extended, as we all know, the seventh sanctioning agreement of Bill Tatham after he agreed to give RIM an exclusive right to the competition, something that I would not do because I didn't feel they had the capability to represent us. Obviously, Bill did, and he got his extension. It is clear that at that point that there were major issues and that things had changed. But we decided that to continue, we needed the best thing to do was to continue the season and continue to pay everyone. The New York Times came out with an article that week. It was the first feature article about rugby in over 20 years that profiled us and rugby, and was the first of five articles that we had lined up in order to bring the prominence. You know, a lot of people have said they've done a lot of things, but I haven't seen anything.
And our on-camera interview was quoted in that article.
Yeah, exactly. You were famous. Nigel left the end of June. Dan was hired to start August 1st, so there was no CEO in the month of July. In the month of July, Bob Latham, who then was the chairman of USA Rugby, gave an interview to a newspaper where he said that he would support a Pro 12 team in the United States. I informed Mr. Latham after I read that article that we'd consider that a breach of our agreement and that it was a violation and need to be corrected. He informed us that even though he was very flattered by the approach of Pro 12, he really felt nothing would ever become of it.
And therein lies the problem.
One of the problems. So USA Rugby at that point told me a conversation had already been going on for very, very many months, something that I didn't know. We informed the violation was unacceptable to us. Right after that, USA informed that Rural Rugby informed us is after Nigel left, they could not locate our sanction agreement in their office. When I told them, and then they considered it of non-existence. When I told them where they could find it in different emails, they found it and they reconsidered it and acknowledged the agreement as in force. We committed to our first, we committed to finishing our first season, and even though at this point I was very certain that things had changed, we continued to pay everyone as well. The final game was played on July 31st. After many invitations to all the pro games, the only people that attended from USA Rugby was Will Chang, who attended one game, Dan Payne, who obviously just started, and John Mitchell, who attended one game. Nigel attended no games. Alex, who was director of high performance,
Alex Magleby,
who had a lot of our players, attended no games. No other board members attending all games. It's noteworthy to note that Rugby Canada attended two games because they had people on our team and were concerned. Our coaches and players at that point were very concerned about the lack of integration between us and USA Rugby. Dan Payne starts as CEO of USA Rugby, and his primary first function was to deal with fixing the relationship between them and Pro. Dan informs me in mid-August that the earliest that he could start this conversation with Chairman Chang, who is now the chairman of the board of USA Rugby, could meet was the end of September. I told him that was unacceptable. They said they had a board meeting in August in Denver, and if I can come out in the next couple of days, they would have dinner with me. We had dinner with me, and they basically attacked me. They told me I was uncooperative. I asked them how I was uncooperative. They had no examples about why I was uncooperative. It was clear from that conversation that they wanted me to leave. It was clear that they wanted what they had given me, that I had earned, that I had paid for, that I've spent millions of dollars and millions of hours, not millions of hours, but thousands of hours getting to that point. Will said very specifically multiple times that he didn't think it would ever happen. That when he had the agreement, he didn't want to take the financial risk or put the effort into it. But now that I had done it, he wanted it back. Doesn't work that way, and it's unfortunate. But even with that, even after coming back and speaking to Steve Lewis, who was still employed by us at that time, I wanted to just terminate everyone at that point. After that meeting, I was so upset. We decided not to, and we continued to pay everyone. After we were basically told, the writing's on the wall that you're going to be in trouble. I expressed to Dan Payne, who was there with at the time, our frustration, and he attempted to have solutions. Many emails went back and forth in conversations. He proposed many different term extensions and ideas. We agreed on a scenario. I accepted the scenario that they agreed to. When he went back to the board turned it down. As far
what
as
was
I'm,
that, what was the term?
I can't get into. There's multiple different scenarios they were agreed to, and it.
And we're talking like September of 2016.
We're talking in September 2016 right now. That's where we are. Okay, I'm sorry. So that goes back and forth. When that became a non-issue because the board rejected it, Dan promised me that they would work on a new sanction agreement prepared by their attorney. I never got it. I questioned when it was coming. He said, it's coming tomorrow. After 3 weeks, it was very clear that it was never coming. I continued to pay all the players. October 2016, Rugby Canada reneges on our agreement for us to play there. I was told we had an exclusive agreement, a sanction agreement. I was told by...
You mean for the following season?
For the following season. I was told by people that the reason that they reneged on the agreement was that after a conversation they had with USA Rugby. I consider that interference and very unfortunate.
Or did it have anything to do with you wanting sanctioning in perpetuity as some...
No, we had agreed. When we don't have a lot of time here.
No.
But to make it short, they didn't sanction us the first season. When they came back and said they wanted to sanction us the second season, I said, I won't even start to talk with you unless we firm up the three important issues, one of them being the term. They signed off on via email that the term was not an issue, that the exclusivity was not an issue. And then months later, they reverted back after having conversations with USA Rugby.
So in essence, what major problems for you were, and what you're saying is helped contribute to you terminating contracts, not paying some folks, was the problem with the lack of an extension that you were promised, the talk of Pro 12, which was
double dealing,
damaging to your brand.
Well, not to editorialize, it was double dealing. My partners, the plan we planned to do this, all the investment, everything that was done, all the time that was put in, had planned to circumvent me by bringing in an outside competition. What would you do if I were me? Right? So as a business, I mean, anyone can be a simple businessman. You don't invest $5 million or $7 million a year for 3 years and then lose your agreement. You don't build a house on land that you're not going to have in 3 years. That was always the agreement. It's provable it's agreement. And it's the reason they don't want me to talk, because they know they're wrong. They won't talk. And you know, at this point, they won't talk to me. They won't communicate with me. Dan Payne is not allowed. He told me, his lawyer said.
Well, you said to me that you'd come on camera with... I am
available to anyone at any time. And they've asked me not to talk, but at this point I think it's important that people know the truth. They understand what the realities are, and then people can make their own determinations on what they feel, who is right and who is wrong. Unfortunately, this is headed into a very toxic place.
Yeah.
And it's going to cost everyone a lot of money and a lot of aggravation. But I'm not going away, as anyone who has invested so much time and money wouldn't. And we're right. You know, unfortunately, we're cut short in time.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's much more to this, would be much more shocking to people as well.
Well, we're going to do it again, Doug, but we have to end here. But I want you to, do you have a final word to the American rugby fan out there?
Well, other than I'm sorry that they're in this situation. They've been put in this situation by forces that I don't fully understand. You know, I mean, I know I speak to you all the time about it. I don't understand what happened. We went from being the best thing that happened to rugby. In a month later, they're cutting our legs off. And honestly, I don't understand what happened. If someone knows what happened, I'd love to hear it, because I don't get it. It's bad for rugby what they've done, and it's continuing to bad rugby. I mean, we can editorialize the performance of the national team this year versus last year, and we can all talk about reasons why. But the reality is, this is unfortunate. And I'm sorry. I'm not sure they're sorry, but I know I'm sorry.
And I'm sorry we're out of time.
Me too.
Because we can talk about this a long time, and we should get you back on to talk more and ask some questions.
Absolutely.
But I appreciate you coming on. I think it's a step in the right direction, and thank you. On behalf of Mr. Doug Schoeninger of Pro Rugby USA, Matt McCarthy, for Rugby Wrap-Up at Studio 34 at the Fantasy Sports Network.